At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
For the Hidden Killers Podcast, I'm Stacey Cole. Donna Adelson was in court for her motions hearing. She is facing charges in a murder-for-hire plot that led to the death of her former son-in-law, Dan Markle. She's making some key legal moves just weeks before her trial is set to begin. Let's go now to the motions hearing.
Yeah, State v. McGuire, and Judge, that's at, I'm sorry, it's U.S. v. McGuire, 307 Federal 3rd, 1192, and that's a 2002 case, which I already cited. Sorry to do that twice. But that case specifically talks about the government being entitled to more leeway in its investigative methods when it's pursuing a conspiracy. As it acknowledges, that's a different type of case, a different type of investigation. Lastly, Judge, I just want to touch on the issue of fresh evidence. You know, as mentioned in the application for the wiretap, law enforcement anticipated the use of an undercover operative in conjunction with this wire because in doing so would produce the fresh results that chatter on the wire. And fresh new evidence among these co-conspirators, the chatter that occurred between them to handle the blackmailer was brand new communication that could only be intercepted using this wiretap. With this new evidence, the argument of stale probable cause becomes moot because the new evidence was being created at the time that the wire was up and the communications were being intercepted. And there's a discussion of this fresh evidence and the importance of gathering fresh evidence in U.S. v. Maestas, M-A-E-S-T-A-S, 2016, Westlaw 9725188. So that was all I was going to put on the record unless Your Honor had some questions for me or wanted me to put anything else.
No additional questions. As to the application for the wiretap, did the defense have any additional exhibits that were previously not provided during the Charlie Adelson motion hearing or for this motion?
No, Your Honor.
Very well. The court will file its written order in this matter. Let's move on from here.
Judge, can we just ask if those exhibits be incorporated in the record here?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Right, let's move on next to the defendant's motion to use a jury questionnaire.
Judge, the law says that it's discretionary. I think Judge Neff is doing one this week or this coming week, if I'm not mistaken.
Homicide?
Yes, sir. I saw some email traffic from Ms. Gaston with respect to it. But the objective is for jurors to come in, not talk about, hey, what do you think that we're here for and what's your opinion on what we're here for and let's discuss the case. And if we're able to have them focus on the answers of the questionnaires and then submit it, the defense feels like we're miles ahead in terms of information gained, decreasing the possibility of tainting the venire or the pool, and being able to hone in quicker on issues. Now, all of the questions, Your Honor, may take exception to some of them. The state may take exception to some of them. Some of them may need to be recrafted. It could be made shorter, but the overall goal is to see if we can get more information in the door before we have to start doing work with them.
Right. From the procedure that was used by both myself and Judge Wheeler, and I believe also Judge Hankinson, is there a particular thing that you're pointing to that otherwise negatively affected getting a jury?
I think there were instances have been brought to my attention, and I think it became evident in Charlie Adelson's trial that the jurors had been downstairs once they got up here. And that there was communication amongst them about the very thing that I was mentioning. Why are we here? What's your opinion on this?
They also did not remain.
I'm sorry?
They also did not remain.
Understood.
I'll put it this way. If you can't follow instructions at the outset, there's no reason to keep going with you.
Yeah.
Anyone that I find in that way,
you're unlikely.
We don't have to worry about them being on the jury, but go ahead.
But are there additional instances of problems? I don't think my answer is yes, there are additional problems. I think it's a circumstance to be able to make it better and make it work more efficiently.
Very well. Response?
The state objects to using the questionnaire. We think, you know, we'd like to hear and see these jurors answering the questions that the court asked last time. Sometimes it's just as important to see, like, how someone answers the questions and their body language and what they say or and how they say it as it is to hear the words that they're saying. And so we'd like to not have one for that reason. Also, we just don't believe that it would save as much time and be as efficient as the defense thinks it may be. I think we have to like litigate, well, what does it look like? And both sides are going to want something different. And then we've got five or six pieces of paper for each juror that the juror then probably ends up getting asked about anyway. So the state would object to it for those reasons.
Very well. As this motion, the court will rule on it now. The court is going to deny the motion. And again, looking at this on practical grounds, ultimately, there is going to be examination by the court on the issues of pretrial publicity and hardship to serve in a trial of this length. The ability to engage an individual venire with the entire venire that has been summoned will sufficiently accomplish the goals of the jury selection. Both parties will be able to follow up on the court's questions. Additionally, as well as my memory serves from the Charlie Adelson jury selection, several individuals who either were going to be cause challenges or other issues were discovered, such as them seeking to gain admission to the jury, were thoroughly rooted out during the process. In that way, this will work the same for Mrs. Adelson as well. Anyone who is biased or anyone who is trying to gain access to the panel improperly, we are going to get to the bottom of it, The process has worked. I believe it will work again. All right, let's move on to the defendant's motion in limine. As to the first prong, testimony concerning pre-arrest silence, the motion indicates that the state is not opposing this. Does the state have any additional argument, or has the position changed?
No, sir.
Defendant's motion in limine is granted as to prong one. As to prong two, wealth evidence, you may make your argument.
Okay, Judge, as you may recall, the state intends to call Mary Hall as a summary witness. I say summary witness because in the past she's been an expert witness, but I don't think she's an expert. That's for another day. As a summary witness to talk about wealth records. If you recall, they put in records showing the combined wealth of the Adelsons. They go through a bunch of accounts and they show what their combined wealth was. Judge, we think this is clear that under U.S. v. Bradley, that evidence of a defendant's wealth may be admissible, quote, when relevant to issues in the case, but that use of a defendant's wealth to appeal to class bias can be highly improper and can deprive the defendant of a fair trial. Okay, this is clearly coming in for that purpose. Their wealth has no bearing on the issue in this case of whether Mrs. Adelson participated in a premeditated murder. There is no dispute in this case. We will stipulate to it that checks were paid out of the Adelson Institute.
That was going to be my first question. And as to your general proposition, I would say you're correct on the law in the same way. The jury is not to consider that a defendant is indigent and hold that against them. It would equally apply to wealth. As it relates to the state's theory of the case, is there any relevant evidence of wealth that you're still disputing?
No. I mean, the argument in this case is that she paid for a murder, and that is not our dispute. I mean, we're disputing was for a murder, but we're not disputing that she signed the checks. We're not disputing that the checks came from the Adelson Institute. And we're not disputing that $100,000 was paid to Catherine Magbanua on the night of July 18, 2014. We're not disputing any of that. That they had the ability to pay the money either.
Was there other evidence as to transfers of vehicles or other property that is alleged to have been given to Ms. Magbanua?
There's evidence of a car that was given to Ms. Magbanua that was in Harvey Adelson's name. We will not dispute that either. So again,
it's just generally, these are wealthy people, not the specific matters that are being alleged a part of the conspiracy or payment for the conspiracy.
We're not disputing any of that. So, and why do they need to show a wealth of millions of dollars? You know, and they spend a lot of time on it, millions upon millions of dollars. What is that relevant to? I don't think it survives 401. But if you go to 403, it certainly doesn't survive that.
Response, State.
Judge, this is a murder for hire. The state's entitled to prove that this defendant had the means to make the payments that are alleged, to make the payoffs that are alleged, to buy the car's property, etc., gifts, etc., that are alleged to have been received by the killers. And it's relevant to show that they had the ability to make the $1 million proposed bribe that preceded the death of Mr. Markell. It's important to show the means relative to the payoff. So this was a drop in the bucket, right? That's important, I think, for the jury to understand the motive and the means and how this was executed.
Very well. As to this particular point, it will be granted in part and denied in part. As to evidence which specifically demonstrates that either Mrs. Adelson or one of the other co-conspirators used assets to pay Catherine McBanawan or other members of the conspiracy, the state is going to be permitted to demonstrate that evidence. As far as any general presentation, however, as to all assets of the defendant, that is where the line is going to be drawn. As to Mrs. Hull being examined on whether the defendant had adequate assets to otherwise participate in what would be called the million-dollar bribe, or is alleged to be the million-dollar bribe, the court will permit that. But again, just going into a general examination of all of their assets as to showing in some sort of way to create a wealth bias, the motion is granted in that aspect. If we need to get more specifically into which pieces will be used, we can do so. Are there questions as to the ruling?
May I have a moment to confirm?
Go ahead.
Judge, may I need something clear to you that might help? We're not going to dispute the million-dollar offer. In fact, we're going to break it out. So that won't be an issue.
Yeah, I don't think they can hamstring us by stipulating to things. Like, we still have a...
You don't have to accept the stipulation.
Right.
I believe this much is clear as a matter of trial practice.
Let me just confer with counsel about the financial evidence and see if there's any clarifications needed, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
So am I correct, Your Honor, that if we're inquiring of the witness, Hull, about the time frame in which, say, the million-dollar offer was being proposed, we would be permitted to ask the witness, what did you analyze, what did you look at, and did the defendant have the means to make that payment at that time? But we would not be permitted to say what was the bottom line in her bank account at that date.
Correct. That examination will be permitted. What would not be permitted is to say the defendant had $10 million at TD Bank on this date. I believe that's ultimately what the defense's motion goes to. Am I correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
I think we understand your ruling, Judge.
Let's move on to number three, hearsay testimony from Jeffrey Lacoste.
Okay. This one's a little bit more complicated.
Not as complicated as you think, but you may make your argument.
All right. So, Judge, in the last trial, we filed a similar motion, and you ruled in our favor. You excluded the hearsay testimony as being just that, hearsay testimony. Okay. And what proceeded to happen, as we all know, is the state then asked the question of this piece of evidence, of these statements, to Wendy Adelson. Wendy Adelson denied that she ever said these things, and then they were able to backdoor it in through impeachment. Okay?
Well, I wouldn't consider it as a backdoor as much as, would you agree with me, there are often times when it comes to evidence, may not be admitted for one purpose, does not exclude its use in other ways.
I would agree with that statement, but I would disagree that it wasn't a backdoor. But nonetheless, that was that trial. This is different because the question to Wendy Adelson in the outset, in that trial, was about a statement that Charlie Adelson made. So it fit an exception to the hearsay rule, which was it was a statement of a party opponent. Okay? In this case, the statement, if they ask Wendy Adelson the question in the outset, it doesn't fit such an exception. It's not a statement of a party opponent. Asking Wendy Adelson what Charlie Adelson said is still hearsay because Donna Adelson is the party opponent. And it's not a statement in furtherance of the conspiracy because none of this had to do with any conspiracy statement in furtherance of the conspiracy to commit a murder. None of these statements are in furtherance of conspiracy. So What I'm trying to say, in short order, is number one, we assume you're going to rule the same way that it was hearsay and prevent it from coming in through Jeff LaCoste. And what we're also arguing is that it should come in through Wendy Adelson because that is also hearsay. It's actually, it's hearsay because it doesn't fit an exception. That it would have in Charlie Adelson's trial. It doesn't fit that any exception in this trial. And so we're asking that it not come in at all. Now, when you look at the statements, they're all a little bit different. Buying her a television was cheaper than a hitman, that Charlie Adelson actually looked into possibly hiring a hitman, and then that Charlie Adelson described a dinner as a celebration. That's even after the murder. And that Charlie Adelson kept large amounts of cash in his home, right? These are all statements that are hearsay, right? They're hearsay if asked of Jeff LaCoste, and they're hearsay if asked of Wendy Adelson. And as a result, they shouldn't be allowed to be asked or admitted.
Response from the state.
I disagree, Your Honor. I think these are statements against interest. These are statements.
One moment. I need to remove some people from the Zoom.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
And are in furtherance of a conspiracy, Your Honor. If Charlie is telling the main beneficiary of this murder that he's looked into hiring a hitman, that's in furtherance of the conspiracy. And how much it's going to cost, too, was part of the statement. That Charlie Adelson had, in fact, in the summer of 2013, begun looking into hiring a hitman to kill Dan Markell, and the cost was either going to be $15,000 or $50,000. One of the two, she said, as you will recall. How can that not be in furtherance of the conspiracy, right? If Wendy denies it, then it's textbook impeachment to call the person that she said it to indicate that she said it.
And that is your argument as to all four of the statements that are being highlighted?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, I will reserve ruling on this topic for now. I want to do some additional research as to statements in furtherance of the conspiracy. Let's move on to number four, testimony from Wendy Adelson.
And Judge, with regards to number four, the state's position may or may not have changed on some of these. I just want to let you know that at the outset. They let me know recently that their positions were possibly changing, so. So here we're trying to prevent certain statements, certain questions from being asked to Wendy Adelson based on relevancy grounds. So the first one is questions about her book regarding human trafficking. We can't for the life of us explain how that would have anything to do with Donna Adelson's trial for first-degree murder. The second one is Wendy's the name changes of her children. There's never been any testimony that those name changes have anything to do with Donna Adelson. We don't know how that could have anything to do, again, with this case. The third is Wendy's willingness to allow Professor Markell's parents to visit their grandchildren since 2014. These statements have nothing to do with this case and, in fact, are used to prejudice the jury against our client, even though it has nothing to do with her. And the fourth is, and it came up in the last trial, asking about the Florida grandparental visitation rights law. I think that is one that the state has agreed to not ask about, but they go back and forth, so I'm not sure. So, but I think that is one. Again, these questions have very little to no probative value, and they're done to prejudice a jury. And so under a standard of 403, they should not be allowed.
Well, also one point with this line of questioning, I'll hear the state's position, but I'll make clear on this. I understand Ms. Adelson is a member of the bar. However, if any testimony is permitted on this point, she is not to be opining on the Florida statutes and the validity of. Is everyone clear on this?
Yes, Your Honor.
Go ahead, Ms. Kaplan.
I think in reference to the book, this is the one I kind of flip-flopped on because I
went back and looked at how it came up last time, which was that Wendy Adelson denied wanting to relocate, denied being disappointed about losing her motion in court to relocate. And that is, of course, the state's theory as the main motive behind this crime was that she was wanting to relocate to South Florida. And I thought at the time that testimony opened the door to her having written a clearly autobiographical book about a woman just like herself, married to a man just like Dan Markell, who's utterly miserable and stuck in the place that she's living in. So if the testimony goes that way this time, I can imagine a scenario where I might want to ask about that. I'm fine with approaching, if Your Honor prefers that, to see if we think we're there, where I can inquire about that. There's a high likelihood I might not want to inquire about it at all. So however you want to handle that one. In reference to the other two items, I think those go to the state's theory that this crime was done in order for Wendy to move to South Florida with these boys and to erase their father and his family from their lives. And there's a lot of evidence of that, and that's part of the failure to provide access to the children to his grandparents and the name changes. So these kids were 2 and 3 at the time, and it's the state's theory that the effort was to eliminate their father, not just physically.
Right. As to that point, Ms. Kaplan, I understand the relocation and the divorce proceedings as it plays into the state's theory, but ultimately, was it not Mrs. Adelson's right as the parent and guardian of the children to change names or make certain parental decisions after the other parent has deceased?
Absolutely, Judge, but those decisions might be relevant to the state's theory in the murder. I'm not alleging that she's done anything illegal, but I think it's relevant to the consideration of whether or not this murder was done. It's inconsistent with what you would expect a parent to do on the heels of the murder of their father, right? So I think a reasonable juror could infer something from that and should be permitted to do so if they find it compelling.
Any further arguments to this issue?
No, Your Honor.
Just one briefly.
Go ahead.
Wendy Adelson is not trial. So, I mean, this may be a different topic if this were the trial of Wendy Adelson, but this is the trial of Donna Adelson. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to dirty up Donna Adelson based on decisions, either fair or not fair, that Wendy Adelson made. And again, that is, again, it doesn't fit, I don't think it fits the relevancy standard, but even if you get there, when you do a balancing test, they're going to be able to show, and they're going to do a pretty good job of trying to show what the divorce situation looked like and how Donna Adelson wanted relocation. I mean, they're going to be able to do that. So just adding this to the fire is, if in any way relevant, is when you do that balancing test, I don't even think it's close, Your Honor, for any of these conclusions.
Very well. As to subprongs 3 and 4, of number 4 of the defendant's motion in limine, I will grant that as to prongs 1 and 2, I will give additional consideration to the argument that's been made, and I will reserve ruling as to those subprongs from now.
Thank you.
Let's move on to prong 5, jailhouse recordings.
So I think this is pretty straightforward, Your Honor. We're not suggesting that Donna Adelson's statements, whatever recordings they might use, I mean, we have to look at the recordings, obviously, we're not suggesting that Donna Adelson's statements don't come in, but Charlie Adelson's statements don't come in. It's hearsay. And it's certainly not in furtherance of a conspiracy. This is after his conviction. So we're only talking about, let me be clear, we're only talking about jailhouse recordings after Charlie Adelson is convicted. So there are recordings in this case that I believe the state intends to use. I don't know. Where there is a conversation between Donna Adelson and Charlie Adelson. Donna Adelson, provided they meet other requirements, Donna Adelson's statements are not hearsay. They're statements of a party opponent. It's an exception to the hearsay. It's not hearsay. But Charlie Adelson's statements are just black letter law hearsay. They're not in furtherance of a conspiracy. It's after his conviction. I don't know how they could be in furtherance of any conspiracy. And some of the statements are inflaming.
Are any of these in any way tied to this issue of travel as consciousness of guilt?
Some of Charlie's statements, no, I don't think so. I think they're tied to, well, I think there are statements where Charlie is talking about his trial, and Charlie is talking about why he believes he was convicted, and Donna is responding. The way she responds, I think, is allowed in. She may then respond in part about travel. I don't know. I'm not sure what they're using, but Charlie's statements are not admissible.
Right. State response.
These are statements against interest that are made by Donna Adelson or are adopted by Donna Adelson in a conversation on a recorded line. We're not going to be able to extract one voice out of a conversation and only play half the conversation.
What is the subject matter of what you seek to admit in this way?
Well, we're talking about a few things. One call is the open line call, which I think Your Honor will know what I'm referencing. Maybe you're going to have to listen to these, but there's a call where Charlie actually drops off the call. So we would want to play a few statements of Charlie just to show, like, this is what's happening. It's a call where he's dropping off. She's, you know, continuing to talk in the background. So I'm not sure if that's the one we're talking about or not, since Charlie's not really featured on that call. There are a couple other calls where the nature includes some of the talk of fleeing, relocating, committing suicide, and those types of things. So maybe those are calls that need to be provided to Your Honor to make a decision.
That would probably be best before I rule on this.
Yes, sir.
Also, as to this point, and I believe there already is a standard jury instruction as it relates at least to law enforcement and a defendant's interview. Is your argument essentially this goes to the context of the call?
Yes. Context, admissions, context and adoptive admissions in some instances, yes.
Very well. I'll need to review these calls before I can actually make a ruling on, because as the defense has noted, this is a call between Mrs. Adelson and Charlie Adelson about the quality of the food at the jail. We have hearsay problems and we have relevance problems. Ultimately, I assume anything the state would be seeking to admit is going to meet a relevance threshold from there, whether playing the entire context of it would otherwise get over the hearsay issue that I still need to determine. If admitted, though, this would be subject to a specific limiting instruction. I have given instructions in other cases concerning the use of context in a recording. I will read the sample instruction to the parties. You also may propose any suggestions if it is admitted. But ultimately, it would be, members of the jury, you're about to hear statements from co-conspirators or co-defendants of the defendant. These statements are pertinent only to explain the reactions and responses they may elicit. You are not to consider these statements by any co-conspirator or co-defendant as true, but only to establish the context of the defendant's reactions and responses. That ultimately, if any will be admitted at all, that will be subject to that instruction to the jury. So it is clear, Ms. Rauschbaum. So it is clear to Mr. Rauschbaum that nothing of a non-party is being admitted for the truth of the matter asserted. What? Last prong, autopsy photos.
So, Judge, the Florida Supreme Court has held that autopsy photographs are admissible if they are relevant and not so shocking in nature as to defeat the value of their relevance. But to be relevant, a photo of a deceased victim must be a probative issue that is in dispute. Okay. In this case, there is no dispute as to Professor Markell's death or the means that he was murdered. There's no dispute as to that. In the last trial, and I might be wrong about this, I think I was kind of conservative, 10 separate exhibits, 2 x-ray images, 8 photographs. I mean, it's clear what the state is trying to do. We understand they have to meet their elements, and one of the elements is to show that he was killed. That has never been in dispute. We understand Old Chief. We understand that ruling as well. But Judge, we would ask that these autopsy photographs be limited. That's our request.
Although I believe, I'm not certain if any of these were used during the examination of Mr. Rivera, but doesn't the examination of Mr. Rivera in some ways coincide with these photos, at least as to how the murder was carried out itself?
I mean, they weren't used with Mr. Rivera, I don't think. They were used with a medical examiner, and they were used in closing arguments. I don't know that, again, I think it's a balancing test. I don't think anyone's disputing how the murder was carried out. There's no dispute. I mean,
no, not that he was shot, but ultimately Mr. Rivera's details of what actually occurred as it relates to his credibility as a witness and explaining other aspects of the conspiracy.
They haven't done that in the past, but we're also haven't. We don't intend on attacking his credibility when it comes to how the murder was done.
State, you may respond.
Judge, this is a material issue that the state's required to prove that the victim is in fact dead. We don't have to accept a stipulation. The photographs are what they are. We entered 8 photographs, which is relatively few for a homicide case. 2 of those photographs were x-rays, so not inflammatory in any way. One of them is an ID photo, and one of them is a photo of the sibling on the victim's arm. So that leaves 4 photos that are the type of autopsy photos that we think of as standard autopsy photos that show some gore. None of those are even internal. We're not seeing a scalp peeled back or the head open or anything like that. So I think this is a situation where we don't need to limit any further what the state has already chosen to introduce in this case.
Well, as to this point, I will find that the value of autopsy photos are probative and the prejudicial effect does not outweigh them. The motion is denied as to this particular point. Let's move on to the defendant's motion to preclude Traveler's consciousness of guilt.
So, Judge, I think our motion to some degree speaks for itself. In this case, the state went to tremendous means to try to wait to arrest Mrs. Adelson until she tried to step foot on an airplane. Their argument is going to be, we believe that suggests flight, and that the flight suggests a guilty mind or conscience. However, we cited some cases, albeit not in Florida. Mm-hmm. We were unable to find similar fact patterns in Florida. And we did cite the standard for the 11th Circuit in our papers, which spends a lot of time talking about the passage of time, which I don't think we need to reiterate again.
No.
I think we've beat that to death today. But the cases are interesting. When I started to look at it, I was kind of surprised, but it got me thinking. And I'm not a judge, as you know. I'm far from it. But I started to think, you know, if I'm deciding this decision, what am I really thinking about with consciousness of guilt? And I'm thinking, well, did the activity that the person did, is that, can I imagine an innocent person doing that same activity? In other words, if an innocent person would have acted the same way, it probably doesn't go to consciousness of guilt. And I think that's a simplified version of those cases, those couple cases that I cited. And here, you can add that to the actual facts in this case, which shows that she wasn't fleeing. What you're going to see is you're going to see that she didn't hide her travel. You're going to see that she applied for a visa with the State Department. You're going to see that she spoke openly to friends about it. In fact, friends booked her trip. You're going to see that she spoke to her lawyers about it. Okay? You're going to see that to make sure that she wasn't committing a crime. You're going to see that she used her own passport. You're going to see that her passport was in her own name. You're going to see that she booked a hotel. You're going to see that she went to her own airport. She didn't fly to Mexico or fly to San Antonio, walk across the border, go. You're going to see that everything was pretty open and notorious, things that would contradict flight. And so,
let me stop you there.
Yes.
Does flight have to be surreptitious?
It doesn't, but when you're doing the balancing, again, it's all balancing, looking at the totality of circumstances, when you're determining whether it goes to consciousness of guilt, flight is a component, right? If for instance, it's surreptitious, well, that would be an argument in favor of the state as to why this would go to her consciousness of guilt. So the straightforward answer to your question is, no, that's not a requirement, but it's one of the balancing things when you're looking at the totality of circumstances. So when you look at the totality of circumstances here, you don't see surreptitious flight. When you look at the totality of circumstances here, you see that this is occurring many, many years, whether we say 9, whether we say 7, after she's a suspect. You see that she's traveled many, many times and always come back, right? So, and by the way, you hear phone calls, their phone calls, the ones that they're mentioning now, where she talks about it, and when she talks about why she's going, and what she's doing, right? And so, look, consciousness of guilt is a very, you know, look, this is going to be, I anticipate, one of their prime arguments in this case, and it's a red herring. And so it should be prevented based on the totality of the circumstances and looking at that 11th Circuit standard. I don't think there's much more else for me to say unless you have questions, but I'm here.
Well, is there any other evidence that puts context on this travel?
Is there any other evidence that puts context on this travel? I'm not sure I'm understanding what you're asking me.
Meaning, were there internet searches? Was there some sort of research about extradition?
Sure.
Are there things that otherwise go to, this is not just the purchase of a flight?
Sure. There are pieces of evidence that I believe the state intends to try to admit that would show both discussion and possibly documentary evidence of looking at places where there are no extradition. Yes, there are evidence of that. That one moment.
Philip?
Yeah, I will. There is evidence of that for sure, but again, that's part of the totality of circumstances. There's explanations for that also as to why that doesn't show that they're going to become fugitives and what's the actor's name?
Harrison Ford.
Yeah, Harrison Ford running around in Southeast Asia for the rest of their lives. But we think that when you do your balancing test, prejudice outweighed. We'd also say this, and this, my colleague brings up this point, it also leads to a variety of other issues. They have an appointment book, for instance, that they recovered when Mrs. Adelson was arrested that talks about a Vietnam villa and payments for a Vietnam villa, right? Well, that can be taken out of context as well. That Vietnam villa is an investment done, as they know, they've spoken, it's their witness, we've deposed them, with an individual named Scott Radius, who lives in Singapore. That individual had an investment with Charlie Adelson in a villa that, by the way, is sand. It isn't even built. And when it is built, they can spend 6 days in it. That villa...
That's under the rules of Vietnam?
No, it's under the... It's like a timeshare. So even when you own it, you can only live in it for 6 days. And so when Charlie Adelson is arrested, Donna Adelson and Harvey Adelson continue to make payments for that villa because that's the agreement they have with Scott Radius, and if not, they lost the prior payments. It leads to, this consciousness of guilt argument leads to a lot of nonsense, to be honest with you. And we think that when you do the balancing test of the totality of circumstances, that it shouldn't be allowed in as consciousness of guilt. And at a minimum, if it is allowed in, we'll probably ask for some sort of limiting instruction. But Judge, we think that it does fit, the case law. Nothing binding on this. I mean, I think the case law of the 11th Circuit is very clear. It's in your discretion. But we think that given what they've done and the importance of this evidence to them, we think that when you do the balancing test, it fails.
State.
Judge, there are just as many factors that suggest that this was for flight, was a matter that was demonstrating consciousness of guilt as the ones that they planned to argue. She was just going on a vacation. She got an urgent emergency visa and bought a one-way ticket to what she had researched to be a non-extradition country. State feels that's relevant. If it's anything that the defense wants to argue and the facts that they've pointed out are they're fair game for cross-examination. They're free to elicit those, and we can have a dispute, and let the jury decide what the evidence shows and what the weight is rather than the admissibility. But how is it a 403 problem if she's just going on a vacation and that's what they're going to show? What's the prejudice if she's just going on a vacation? Problem for them is that there's plenty of evidence showing it wasn't just a vacation, it was something else. There is evidence of fleeing, and that's what we're entitled to show.
As to this motion, I am prepared to rule. I review the cases cited by the defense within its motion, and also looking at this as a matter of weighing prejudice versus probative value, the motion is going to be denied. I do believe this is a matter that goes to weight versus admissibility. The finder of fact, the jury, is going to determine whether Ms. Adelson was in fact merely researching a vacation or if she was in fact seeking to avoid prosecution or this is consciousness of guilt. Really, it's not for the court to exclude as it is relevant and probative. As far as any limiting instruction that the defense would seek, you may submit that concerning this issue. Right, I believe that covers the defense motions for today. Mr. Rashbaum, if you can submit orders, at least for the matters that have been ruled upon concerning these matters. Let's move to the state's motion in limine. As to prong one, Ms. Kappelman.
Yes, Your Honor. As we have done previously, we are moving to exclude Mr. Rivera's affiliation with the gang and any specific prior bad acts as irrelevant and bad character evidence. Did you want me to just address prong one?
Just prong one for right now.
Okay.
I believe at least in the prior trial, this was granted in part, denied in part, specifically as it relates to the defense being able to cross-examine on the issue of bias as it relates to any plea. Are you aware of any authority that would otherwise suggest this is an inappropriate ruling?
No, Your Honor. I anticipate Your Honor would make the same ruling.
Very well. Does the defense have any argument to make as to prong one?
Well, I mean, I think we're going to have to bring up the Latin Kings. I mean, they inserted it. We weren't able to make this argument in the last trial. His affiliation with the Latin Kings is very relevant as to why and how Mrs. Adelson acted.
Well, I believe it did come out that he was affiliated with a gang, did it not? It's just the name Latin Kings wasn't used?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't want to go afoul of the court's ruling, right? The fact that he is the head of the Latin Kings is a relevant fact that was actually inserted by the state in their bump operation, right? The whole point of the bump is someone's approaching Mrs. Adelson, who is supposedly also a member of the gang and is speaking on behalf of Mr. Rivera, who wants to get paid, right? And so part of the reason why Donna Adelson acts the way she does and talks the way she talks is because of Mr. Rivera's affiliation with the Latin Kings. I mean, I don't see how we avoid that. Now, as far as his bad acts, I don't plan on going into, just like I did in the last trial, how many murders he's done, what, you know, how many rapes he's done, you know.
So the name of the identifier, that is what you're seeking to make use of.
Of course.
Ms. Kaplan, response as to the use of the name of the group.
I do not agree that the name is in the evidence that the state intends to produce. So if that's Your Honor's ruling, which we would request, then criminal street gang could be substituted for Latin.
Judge, we would disagree with that. I mean, there's a difference between being a member of a street gang and being a member of the Latin Kings. And when Ms. Adelson hears that the guy...
As one gang has greater credibility than the other?
It certainly does in Miami. Right? So when Ms. Adelson hears that the Latin Kings are behind this, I mean, that's what she hears at some point. That's what the evidence is going to be. It affects how she does certain things. Right? And so, you know, we think that that is relevant. And that is necessary for her defense.
Very well. As to prior bad acts of Mr. Rivera, the motion is granted. I will also, once again, permit the defense to explore Mr. Rivera's bias in connection with his plea and any sentence that he has received. As to the specific affiliation with the Latin Kings as being a relevant or probative issue, that goes to explaining the defendant's actions. I'm going to reserve ruling as to that. Specifically, again, what in what context beyond hearing she knew he was a gang member, are you planning to use this or present this to the jury, Mr. Brashbaum?
So if there is testimony that she heard he was a member of the Latin Kings and she reacted a certain way, I should be able to confirm with him that he is the head of the Latin Kings. That's it.
I don't think it's a 501c3, but this was a particular chapter that he was in charge of. Is that what you're
Correct.
Getting at?
Correct.
Ms. Kaplan.
Judge, we just think it's prejudicial, more prejudicial than probative. We don't think the evidence is going to support that she knew he was a Latin King. She knew there were gang members that were threatening to kill, is what the evidence showed in the last trial. So I guess we'll see how things develop. I would request that if the defense thinks the door has been opened to that, we approach before they start throwing around the term Latin King.
All right. Generally, as to the issue of Mrs. Adelson conformed her behavior or acted in response to what she believed were the threats of a gang member generally, I will permit that to be offered as a part of the defense's case in chief or any cross-examination. Specifically as to the use of Latin Kings, I'm going to reserve on that issue for now.
And so, Judge, just so I'm clear, before we ask any questions with the words Latin Kings in it, we will approach.
Correct.
Thank you.
states prong two. I believe there is no objection on this issue.
No objection, Your Honor.
Prong two is granted. Prong three, Ms. Kappelman.
Yes, Your Honor. Prong three relates to Mr. Rivera's mental health status. This has been excluded previously. To reiterate, there's no evidence of Mr. Rivera's mental health condition affecting his testimony at any of the previous trials, nor do I have any evidence that he's suffering from any mental health symptoms currently that may affect his upcoming trial. Obviously, if that changed, I would notify the defense and the court, and there's no evidence that he was suffering from these symptoms at the time that these events that he's testifying about occurred, so I would move to exclude any evidence or mention of his mental health conditions or diagnoses or symptoms.
Response?
We don't plan on doing this unless something crazy happens in court. Then we'll approach the honor and we'll discuss it then, but we don't plan on proactively talking about his mental health.
Very well. Prong three is granted. Counsel for the defense is directed to alert the court should you believe the door has been opened in a material way concerning this issue. As to prong four, is there any dispute as to this prong?
No, Your Honor. We've asked for the same courtesy with regards to our investigator, and they've agreed as well.
Prong four is granted. Prong five, is there any dispute?
No, Your Honor.
Prong five is granted as well. As to prong six, is there any dispute?
No, Your Honor.
Prong six is granted. As to prong seven, the demonstrative aids, Ms. Kappelman, you may make your argument.
Yes, Your Honor. The state has prepared demonstrative aids, which combine video footage, clarified audio recording, and transcripts into one item that we'd like to present to the jury for both the Dolce Vita recording as well as the Matsuri recording. Those are mentioned in paragraphs 4 and 6. We also have similar to what we've used previously with the wiretap calls. Slides that have the scrolling transcript along with a photo of who's speaking, which we think assists the jury in understanding those items of evidence. I think that was all that was covered in these. Yeah, so Dolce Vita, Matsuri, and the wire calls. We did previously have an objection to any editing, any underlining or any highlights, which we have removed from those exhibits. So those will not be present.
Well, response?
Our position is the same as in the last trial. We don't object to the transcripts from the wire. We do object to transcripts for Dolce Vita and Matsuri due to audibility. And last time, I think the judge ruled with us and ruled that the transcripts would come in for the wire, but not for Dolce Vita or for Matsuri, and that's our position today as well.
I reviewed the recordings of both Dolce Vita and Matsuri once again. The issue that I keep coming back around to on this, Ms. Kappelman, is ultimately for a recording that does have some limitations or issues, how does the transcript not otherwise suggest to the person or the, I should say, jurors who need to listen to and interpret it, what is on the recording if they themselves are not able to make it out clearly?
We do have and had in the last trial as well the authentication of the transcript by a party who was present for the conversation. I think that's what made the difference in reference to the Dolce transcript use in the last trial. We were able to use that. Matt Suri was out. The defense is correct on that. That could potentially
Is that witness going to authenticate then the transcript itself?
Yes, Your Honor.
Rashbaum, any remaining arguments concerning them?
Yeah, you still can't hear tons of the transcript, and they're guessing as to words on tons of the transcript, and you still can't hear the first 31 minutes because they didn't record it. And they have a recording of those 31 minutes, but they didn't include it. So it should be, look, the standard is, in situations like this, you leave it up to the juries to hear what they hear. We're actually not moving to preclude the audio, we're precluding a transcript, right? The law is pretty clear that it's up to the jury to hear what they hear and make a decision based on that and not what the state thinks they hear.
I agree with you, that aspect is clear. The additional portion of the witness who will swear that the transcript is authentic, what is your argument to that?
But every other word of the transcript is unintelligible. UI. So, that should not come in. You can hear some of those UIs. Sure, I can cross the witness, but do we really want to go through that when it's very easy that they just hear what they hear? That's the default.
Very well. This will be granted in part and denied in part. As to any transcript for Matsuri, which there is no authentication available by any witness, that transcript will not be presented to the jury. The jury is to determine for themselves what they believe the recording holds. As to any use of transcripts as a demonstrative with the wiretap calls, that will be permitted. As to the use of any transcript relating to Dolce Vita, that will be subject to a proper foundation and authentication being made by the witness. The defense may challenge the foundation and authentication by the witness. However, if the proper foundation is laid at that point, this is no longer guesswork as it relates to the transcript. The parts that are unintelligible cannot be misrepresented in any way. The witness may not misrepresent the parts that are unintelligible. However, to the extent the witness can say, this is what was said during the meeting, that is a proper foundation basis for that testimony, for that evidence to be presented to the jury. That is the ruling as to that item. All right, let's move on to states. Prong 8, statements to elicit sympathy for the defendant.
Yes, Your Honor. We had a prior hearing during the pendency of this case where some issues came to light regarding the defendant's allegations of how she was being treated at the jail. I've conferred with the defense on this, who's advised they do think that type of reference and material would be admissible in this trial. As such, I would move to exclude any reference to the conditions in the jail as irrelevant under 401 and, basically just being offered to inflame the sympathies or passions of the jury, and more prejudicial than probative under 403.
What would this be offered for by the defense?
I don't plan on offering it. It depends, though, what comes up at trial, right? So, including consciousness of guilt, because it goes into why someone might do what she did to avoid being in jail waiting a trial, right? So, again, I don't plan on doing it. We don't plan on doing it openly, and we would come to you before we did it, but I didn't want to agree to it because I don't know what's going to come up at trial, right? So it's certainly not going to be something we do without notifying the court first, and I don't expect to do it.
Well, as a important proposition of law, jail sucks. However, why it would become relevant that jail sucks, that's really the question.
As I stand here today, we don't plan on doing it. But if we think it becomes relevant, we'll certainly bring it to the court's attention before we do anything like it.
Very well. Prong 8 is going to be granted subject to any proper or relevant basis in which this evidence could be examined upon. Counsel for defense at the appropriate time will need to raise why they think a relevant basis has occurred, and ultimately a proffer will be taken out of the presence of the jury. I think that takes us through everything for this morning, other than the other outstanding motion involving Sergeant Corbett, or any other motions being anticipated by the defense or state concerning the exchange of witness list exhibits.
That did happen, Judge, and we are still in communication about small changes that are happening, and we'll bring it to your attention if we have any issues, but so far we're getting along okay on exhibits and witnesses. There's still a couple depositions outstanding which we're working on, so no issues to report at this time. We do want to approach on one other matter, though, before we are done for the day here.
All right. Mr. Morris.
Judge, on demonstratives. And when I say demonstratives, I want to make sure that I understand what you're talking about, you understand what I'm talking about. I've got some flow charts or timelines that I am constructing. They're not finished or complete yet, and importantly, I don't think they're going to be on Tuesday. I addressed that issue because that's the deadline that we've set. I addressed that issue with Ms. Kaplman yesterday. She indicated that she had similar timelines. We both agreed, with your Honor's permission, that we're okay not being constrained by the deadline insofar as we share with one another prior to trial. That way, if there are any issues, we're able to discuss those. In other words, no surprises. So the first thing I ask is for your permission to let us manage ourselves, I guess, to a degree. I think that we're in a good position to do that, and what we're discussing as demonstratives are not contentious issues. They're not argumentative issues, I don't believe, on the timeline issues. Second issue is because discovery, because of the depositions, there have been a couple of things that have come up. We're working through those in terms of whether there would be additional motions in limine. And when we approach, you'll have a better understanding of it. But that's basically where it at, where we're at. Everybody's working, playing fine in the sandbox together, so to speak.
Very well. I would just ask for a status update on September 6th when we have the next hearing as to Sergeant Corbett's testimony and his presentation. It's not that I do not trust you all, but as I have found in the course of my many years on the bench, everyone's saying all is fine until all is not fine.
Until it's not, sure.
We'll discuss it on September 6th.
Yes, sir.
You may approach.
First thing that comes downstairs. So what happened is they They didn't say it was the crime. They didn't say, hey, thank you, Dad. They started talking before we got up here. Maybe for the next year, I should remind them and tell them there's something we can do so that we don't have that issue repeated.
I think what I'm going to do is make sure we have more goals and goals and maybe I can be even earlier.
For this morning, please contact Lynn about the setting of the hearing for next Friday. Everyone have a good day. I am turning off Zoom at this point. Have a good day, everyone.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Extra Value Meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.